Thank you for being a listener of the Women in Tech podcast. To support the podcast and cheer us on, become an MVL, Most Valuable Listener, on our private feed where you'll have ad-free episodes and join us in Zoom meetups to meet other listeners of our podcast community. Go to womenintech.love, linked in the show notes.
I definitely have taken comfort in doing things for myself, by myself, because I think betting on yourself is the best thing you can possibly do. Because again, ultimately, no one else is going to bet on you if you don't bet on yourself. And that's probably been my biggest learning as a founder. You know, when people say, hey, like, why are you doing X? Or is it even possible? It's like, well, no, it is. Like, I'm doing it. It is possible. And like, let me show you how.
3, 2, 1. My name's Esprit Devora, host of the Women in Tech Show. The show means a lot to me. The reason why I wanted to create the Women in Tech Show is I wanted to create a positive piece of content, something where people can listen and say, if she can do it, so can I. Women in Tech podcast, celebrating women in tech around the world. So excited for our next guest, Ayomi, coming at us from San Francisco. Hello, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you so much for having me. I'm super excited to be here.
I'm so excited to share your story because you're so empowering in the way that you conduct yourself, both professionally and just in community. And so I thought you would be an amazing story to share your journey and how you became who you are today and where you're headed. Let's start at the beginning. Go ahead and tell us a little bit about who you are and what you do.
Okay, who I am and what I do. So background, you can probably tell from my accent that I'm from the UK originally, but I've moved around a lot over the last 10 years. So I was first in the UK, then moved with work to the Middle East, and I was in Dubai for a little bit. And then I moved to the US and I've lived in Boston, New York, and most recently moved to San Francisco. So for me, being able to live and work abroad has been really, really important to kind of building my global mindset and love meeting people from different parts of the world. So right now I'm a full-time founder building Canopy, which is a semi-anonymous social app for content creators to be able to learn, earn, and grow together. Started my journey as a management consultant, which honestly feels like a lifetime ago and a different version of myself. But I did consulting for the best part of 8 years, which is actually why I started moving around a lot with work. And then I had a bit of an epiphany during the pandemic. And I think a lot of people had an epiphany during the pandemic. And March 2020, we were sent home from client site. And that was when I downloaded TikTok. And that was really the entry point into my startup creator journey. I became obsessed with the platform. I still am obsessed with TikTok. And I ended up cold messaging someone who worked there, asking them for a job. And I just sort of said, like, literally, I love this platform. I want to come help build it. Like, can I have a job, please? And 2, maybe 3 months later, I quit consulting and I joined TikTok in the middle of the pandemic. And sort of the rest is history.
Let's pause there for a second, because that's such a strong thing to share about cold outreach. What do you think your cold outreach did that was different from the people that I hear in the ethers? I've applied to 152 jobs and I just can't get anything. What was different about your message? And who did you message? And not the person, but unless you wanted to share, but like, how did you find the person to message?
So LinkedIn has definitely become my best friend. I actually got my last 2 roles through DMing via LinkedIn. I always try and reach out to someone who is either, you know, working in the same team that I'm trying to apply for or is relevant to that job, or if we have some sort of common connection, whether that is something they've written in their bio or something that kind of resonates with me. But I think in terms of standing out with cold outreach is to be really specific, because people are very busy. People get lots of, you know, emails or inbox messages and DMs. And I'm always like super short and succinct, maybe four or five sentences max, which is simply, you know, why am I reaching out? Why am I reaching out? Why do I love whatever the product or the company is? And why, you know, what's my kind of, why am I the right person for this role? And what's my ask? So I always ask for a phone call and say, you know, I know you're super busy, but would you have 15 minutes? But I think it's about showing how passionate you are about the product or the company. You know, I think I said in my message that I'm obsessed with TikTok. I'm on the app every day as a consumer. I want to start making this content, but I also see the bigger vision of how TikTok was going to change things for everyone. And it did end up changing things for a lot of people. So I think getting across, you know, why you, because there's so many people reaching out, but what makes you special? What makes you unique?
You know, it's interesting. I tell everybody, don't close our own doors. Like, let someone else say no. Why should we say, oh, we won't be good enough for that, or we don't have enough for XYZ? Let the other person decide what's right for them.
Exactly. Yeah. And I just think as well, there's always that, you know, 1% chance that someone's going to respond, and it might just be the opening or the start of an amazing new journey. So always, I'm all about shooting your shot. And even if it seems random or, you know, completely out of reach, what's the worst that can happen?
How do you, just to stay on this for one more second, how do you rise above all the inbound that people get when they get like super, you know, like all those agency emails that people get or those solicited emails, and people are like, oh, I can't even trust my LinkedIn DMs anymore. How do you rise above, like, right from the start, from a place of sincerity, that someone wants to read your email, do you think?
That is a good question, because I get a lot of those inbounds myself, which is really frustrating. I think if it's a LinkedIn DM, be really specific about the subject title. So I would always put, you know, name of the company, the name of the role, open role, and, you know, make it very clear why I'm reaching out. I think on email, though, I have sent people videos. I've sent people TikToks before over email to say, like, I've emailed them, but I've said, hey, I know you're super busy. Here's a quick TikTok explaining why I want to get time with you. I really hope you'll watch it for 30 seconds. It's literally 30 seconds. So try and do something different to stand out.
I think video is so powerful when you're talking about building new relationships with communication. I've done that too, utilizing Loom. And I'll just create a personal video, and I'll make sure that I use the person's name and things so they know it's not just one video I've sent to. Oh my gosh, I've received those where it's like one video that they send to tons of people trying to play off like it's just me. Yeah, you could totally tell. It's really annoying. So how'd you make your way from consulting to working at TikTok to becoming a founder? Like, that's a huge jump. Consulting's amazing money and pretty stable. TikTok's like really career accelerating. I feel like it's just like exciting energy. And then being a founder is like the same amount of like anxiety and exhilaration.
If not more. I think TikTok really gave me the startup bug. And for context, when I joined TikTok, it was maybe 20 months old. So when I joined, it was just a startup. There were less than 500 people in the company in the US. It was a very close group of us who were helping to build this platform. So that definitely gave me the startup bug. And the people who work at TikTok are amazing. And I learned a lot because a lot of people were ex-startup, early stage startup people. And that's what really gave me the bug to go into a startup myself. I would say, though, I've always been kind of, I guess, going from really big companies to smaller to now a team of one. And I think doing it gradually kind of gave me that confidence to be able to bet on myself and go it alone, so to speak. And I think at TikTok, it really taught me a lot of life skills, you know, how to work under pressure. You know, TikTok is renowned for working very, very hard if you're inside the company, but also seeing the impact of what you're doing. I think the best part of being at TikTok was that people would run up to me in the street if I was wearing a TikTok hoodie or something and say, hey, you know, TikTok changed my son's life or my mom's life, or, you know, now we've been able to pay off my student loan, or, you know, incredible stories. And that was really impactful. And it kind of made me think, you know, I would love to be able to build something to help more people make a living from content creation.
You've shared that you're on TikTok also as a consumer often. What is your take on having a healthy relationship with social media? I think that's something that's progressively becoming very concerning that we need to be proactive about in our own lives. So what's an actually attainable thing to have a healthy relationship with social media as an adult?
I definitely wish I knew the answer to that, because I would like to have a healthier relationship with social media. What I have learned, though, is that not everything you see on social media is reality. You know, I think often, again, I do think it's actually dependent on platforms. For me, I don't personally consume content on Instagram anymore, because I personally found that not to be helpful for my well-being and my mindset, because everything felt really unattainable, only sort of the highlight reel of life. I think why I gravitated towards TikTok as my main platform of choice was because it felt like real life, ordinary people in their houses talking about ordinary things, which all of us go through. And, you know, I make content now. I'm a full-time founder, part-time creator. And the reason I feel comfortable sharing on TikTok is because I don't feel as if I have to pretend to be a different version of myself that's, you know, picture perfect. I shoot content in my bedroom. You know, it's very low end production. But I would say in terms of healthy relationship is set boundaries and also realize when you're maybe going down a spiral. There's some time, like, for example, I have like a timeout button on my TikTok which times me out when I've spent longer than 30 minutes in a row on the platform. And it's just a reminder to say you've spent 30 minutes, like you should go and do something else, you know, go back to real life. So try and set healthy habits and boundaries and also recognize when you are also consuming too much or, you know, you're spending too much time on something that probably isn't the best for you, depending on the mental state you're in.
I want to kind of lean further into your life as a creator and then dive into your life as a founder and how you made that transition. Let's stick with creation first, though. Tell us about your creator world and what your production process is.
Yes. So my main platforms are TikTok and LinkedIn, which are obviously very, very different. But for TikTok, it's honestly as simple as just getting I actually record most of my content in my bedroom, which is my home office. And just getting my phone out. I don't really use any editing tools or anything like that. Good lighting is essential though. Swear by good lighting, natural lighting, daytime content. But it's really very low production. And I think why it resonates though is because it's authentic. You know, I don't batch my content. I make content in real time based on something I'm thinking about or I've just seen or it sparked my interest.
That's so funny. I do the same.
Right. And I think
I don't really hear people doing that anymore.
No, everyone batches content on a Sunday night to get ready to post per day. But for me, it's more what inspires me at that time. I then literally get my phone out and make a quick TikTok video and then post it. So that personally works for me being in real time. I think with LinkedIn, I'm a lot more thoughtful, I would say, because I write longer form content on LinkedIn. So it's more around storytelling through text. So I'm definitely more intentional and thoughtful. And I try and post once a week. Whereas on TikTok, you could be posting multiple times a day, potentially, just on kind of what's coming in. It feels like a lot quicker process on TikTok.
And where can people find you, both on LinkedIn and TikTok?
Yes, my TikTok is Ayomi Tok. Not very original there. And my LinkedIn is just my name. So Ayomi Somerowera.
And can you spell it real quick for everybody?
Yes.
Because they might be driving their car or something.
Yes. It's my first name is Ayomi. And my last name is Samaraweera. And I'm probably not the only one on LinkedIn, but Ayomi Somerowera, I feel like there's not that many of us.
We'll also include it in the show notes. If you wanted to scroll down, you could just click the link and open it, whichever one you prefer. And before we move in to your life as a founder, what is your creator brand known for? Like, what are you positioning yourself for people to come to you for?
For sure. So I would say broadly aligned actually on both platforms. It's very much, LinkedIn is very much about my startup journey. So I've been building in public for the last 12 months. Talking about entrepreneurship, being a founder, being a solo female founder, and sort of what goes into that behind the scenes. Similarly, on my TikTok, it started off as career content. So advice going into management consulting, into big tech, interviews, resumes, things like that. And I've also been documenting my startup journey.
Taking the leap from working at a company, having that nice paycheck, and then becoming a founder, what inspired you to want to go off and create your own thing?
I must be crazy because I really do miss that paycheck now. For me, it was kind of having like a bigger purpose, working towards like a bigger mission and goal. And, you know, I really love that TikTok was so mission orientated. So when you're working, grinding away, you know, long hours, it felt as if you were there was an impact and you could see that impact in real time. And that really inspired me. And with Canopy, I was starting to make content myself as a creator. And I quickly noticed that it's really hard to become a full-time creator and monetize your content and build a living from it. And that was a pain that I experienced firsthand myself. And I was like, why isn't there more help out? Like, why isn't there more information out there to help people become a creator? We have all these amazing platforms, all this amazing technology to enable someone to make content, but no one talks about the business side. You know, how do you do your taxes? How do you review and redline contracts? Like, no one teaches you the business side of running a business as a creator. And that felt really frustrating. And I was lucky that I had some friends who are also creators that I could go and ask for help and mentorship, which is really important. But not everyone has that access. If you're just starting alone, if you're not in a creator hub, if you're not in New York or LA, you're somewhere else, you might not be surrounded by other creators and get these opportunities to learn. And that was really the idea and inspiration behind Canopy. You know, can we make this digital home where any creator, regardless of size or status or how long you've been in the game for, can join and can learn from each other, whether it's sharing your own experience or learning from someone else's. And that mission and just seeing the feedback and the reception we've got since we've launched the app, it's incredible to see people say, hey, you know, I was able to negotiate 20% higher deal because of advice someone gave me in Canopy. Or, you know, I was able to grow my audience because of a tip I learned about how to grow on LinkedIn from Canopy. So kind of hearing those, that kind of real-time feedback from the community we've built is really my motivation behind this.
I'm curious what your thoughts are on followers and status and how to continue to create for the curiosity and enjoyment of creating versus getting caught up in the dopamine of the likes and the comments. I know myself as being someone who loves to write, I'll write to write. I like LinkedIn a lot, so I'll post on LinkedIn.
I love your LinkedIn content, by the way.
Really? Oh, that means a lot to me. You have no idea. Thank you so much. So I'll post on LinkedIn and I'm posting sincerely. My personal dream is to write a really meaningful book one day. I've written a book, but like I have the draft. It doesn't matter. Anyway, I have this dream to write a book. And so this is me practicing on LinkedIn. And so I'll post it and then it'll be fine. And then I'll at some point, like we all do, see that it had 2 likes or something. And it's not even why I posted it. I posted it because I actually wanted to express myself that way. And then my brain goes somewhere else and I'm like, oh my God, maybe I shouldn't post it. I'm like, Spree, what are you doing? Like, who cares? And then something that I barely put any creativity into will go super viral. And I'm like, I don't want to create for the purpose of going viral or getting traction. Like, I'm not going to intentionally be controversial or something. So how do you perceive that whole dynamic?
I honestly think it's a really difficult balance to strike because it's really easy to get caught up in likes and virality and, you know, that kind of status you get with that and follow account. So I've definitely had to check myself with that. And sometimes when you're on TikTok is a crazy time to be on it. And there's a video will get 500,000 views. I post the next video and it gets 2,000. And then you kind of feel a little bit down about it. But I think what I've learned at least on TikTok is that I try and go back to the core, which is I'm making content to educate people. And as long as one person maybe leaves a comment to say, hey, this was really useful, or there's some engagement there and it impacted one person in a positive way, that for me is like my win versus the virality. Also, I would say as well is that I think things have shifted as well. Before, you know, people wanted to have 1 million followers and brands wanted to work with these bigger creators because of reach and brand awareness. I think there's also been a shift though in brand mindset where they've realized actually micro creators with smaller followings have a really loyal and deeply engaged community. That's a lot more beneficial. So I think about your first, even with a startup, right? They always say, think about your first 100 customers and then go from there. You know, think about your core following. As long as you're providing value to those core, even if it's 10 people, one person in fact, think about your core. As long as you're providing value to them, things will grow and you'll learn more about what your community actually wants from you and how you can help them more versus trying to go viral just for the sake of numbers. Because ultimately, numbers are not what people are going to remember you by. It's going to be the people who say, because of that video that LinkedIn post from Esprit, I was able to do X differently or do X better. And like, that's what makes, I think, the difference to me.
I appreciate you saying that. Do you have, for lack of a better word, this sounds so gross, like I'm cringing inside even thinking about this word, but do you have a funnel that makes it make sense how you invest your time as a creator where the end output will lead to either a customer or just some sort of end goal so the economy of your life makes sense in how you're spending your time online?
That is a great question. And I wish I was more strategic. Maybe that's homework for me today to really think this through. I don't specifically, but what I would say though, is that I was able to grow on TikTok from 0 to 10K in less than 3 months. And at that time I was really analyzing the backend data of what videos were quote performing and why. And by performing, I was looking at saves and comments and shares versus likes and views. Because again, I think saving, commenting, and sharing means you've engaged with that post in a different way. You've seen utility in it. So I was really doubling down on the content that people were saving to understand like, what value are they getting from that and spending more time. And when I built out my content plan for my first year on TikTok, I try to always do at least 50% of my content to be content to be saved, because it provides like direct utility to the end, to the end sort of viewer, versus content just simply to be liked, just to be liked or to be watched. And that has been sort of my main differentiator.
You said that you built out a year-long content thing, that a content strategy or a content plan. I forget the exact word you used. That's a big deal. So what was that year-long planning look like? Like, was it a PowerPoint deck for yourself? Was it a doc? And what was included in that?
It was, and again, for content, it wasn't like a content plan in terms of like specific pieces of content per week, per month. It was more like the buckets of content I wanted to talk about and tracking some of the metrics behind that per month to see where I was at. Yeah. It was a Google Doc. It started off on my iPhone notes. Everything is in my iPhone notes, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
And then I think it improved, it graduated to an actual Google Doc maybe. But it was more just a track the sort of return almost, you know, if I'm posting about these three topics, which of those topics has resonated the most based on the engagement?
Yeah. How much time do you spend per week in being a creator, would you say?
In full transparency, I am spending all my time being a full-time founder right now.
Founder, not creator.
Founder, not creator. So I haven't been posting actively on TikTok, but I am still keeping LinkedIn going. Because I think LinkedIn has been really important to my founder journey specifically based on the audience that's on LinkedIn, whether it's mentors, strategic partners, customers, creators, investors. That's been really important to me. But I would say the majority of my time is being a full-time founder at the moment. And I would like to get back to creating content, because I see creating content actually as more of an outlet and a release and something I really, really enjoy doing.
So talk to me about jumping from TikTok and then making that decision to start your own company. Were you nervous in making that? How hard of the decision was that for you?
It was definitely a big decision. So for context, I was at TikTok and I left TikTok to pursue potentially building something myself, but I didn't go full-time straight away with Canopy. I went to a smaller creator startup called Jelly Smack to be the chief of staff to the president there. And that was very intentional, because I think a chief of staff role is a great role to learn how to run and operate a startup. And I really wanted to work with Sean, who was the president there at the time. So that was really phase one. And on the side, I was doing user interviews about Canopy. I was trying to, you know, build out what does Canopy potentially look like. And I'd actually been really transparent with my boss at Genesec about this. And I told him from when I interviewed with him, that I was working on something on the side. My longer term goal is to go and found something myself. But for now, I kind of want to learn as much as I can about how to run a startup. And he was incredibly supportive, which was great. So I was sort of building on the side while I was at TikTok, while I was at Jelly Smack. And then after 6 months of Jelly Smack, I was laid off. So I really feel as if it was less around me making a conscious decision. It was more around, this seems like a window of opportunity, and I'm going to treat it that way as an opportunity. And I felt pretty confident in the idea. I'd done about 6 to 8 months of research and interviews, and I had like, you know, wireframes drawn up and everything. And that for me was sort of my opening. I was like, do you know what? I'm going to see this as an opportunity and go full time with building Canopy.
Give everybody context about Jelly Smack, because that's a really important company in the creator ecosystem.
Yeah. So Jelly Smack is an awesome company. They ultimately help creators go multi-platform. So say if you are a super successful YouTube creator, for example, you obviously need to be on all platforms at this point to be able to monetize.
Like Nas Daily.
Yes, exactly. Nas Daily, Call Me Chris, Law DIY, they have some amazing creators on their roster. And if you want to create a Snap show, for example, or create a podcast, or you know, have a Facebook page, that is really highly lucrative to monetize. Jelly Smack are able to effectively entirely manage your page on any of these platforms. And they have an incredible algorithm that really helps to drive content and to drive engagement and start, you know, they can start a Facebook page from you and take it from zero to, you know, 100,000 people, for example, in a very short space of time, and manage that for you and work with the creator artistically to develop the content and produce the content and execute the content. So they are really a behind the scenes. I feel like they're like one of the most successful yet unknown creator companies, in terms of the fact they are behind the scenes intentionally, and they really let the creator shine, and they kind of do the work on the back end.
Is anything you learned from such, we'll call them viral companies like TikTok, like Jelly Smack, that you were able to apply in building your startup, in building Canopy?
For sure. I think there's lots of things. One, in terms of just how to like build from scratch and be really scrappy. Both companies are still probably very, very scrappy, which I think is really important when you are a lean team, you know, as a founder and building a startup early stage. I think with TikTok, I learned a lot about trust and safety and the importance of user safety on platform and moderation practices, best practices around that. That's really important to us as Canopy to build a trusted community where users feel safe sharing information. Definitely learned a lot about that from my TikTok days. And at Jelly Smack, learned a lot around what creators are looking for. You know, what are some of the challenges and pain points that creators have? Same with TikTok, in fact. I was working with creators there. What are some of the pain points and challenges? What are the things that creators don't know but need to know in order to run a business? And obviously, the creators that Jelly Smack work with are sort of the top 1% creators who do run very successful businesses. So I was definitely able to learn from them, what does it take? What do you need to be thinking about to be able to run a successful business?
Walk us through somebody becoming a customer, a community member of Canopy. What does that look like? What's it mean? Where do they go?
Yes. All of the above. Okay, so Canopy is an app, a mobile app, and we've actually been running a closed pilot for the last 4 months. But essentially, you can now actually go on the App Store, download the Canopy Creator Community app, and it's a very quick 60-second sign-up process whereby you share, I think, your email, your social handle, your content niche, and what you're interested in learning about. And that really curates what you see on your feed. And the way Canopy is made up, it's a text-based discussion forum. I would describe it as a less chaotic version of Reddit, but just for social media creators. And it's very much around education and information sharing. And there are 12 different topics of interest that we call branches within the app. And that ranges from pay transparency to mental health, to what events are going on, to algorithm changes, and sort of everything in between. And people are just out there throwing questions and being really helpful to each other. And I think that's been really refreshing to see, because I think historically there's been a lot of gatekeeping amongst the creator community. And because this is a semi-anonymous platform, you don't always know, you know, who's sharing it. I think that's enabled people to feel more comfortable sharing things around pay transparency, for example, that ultimately people have tried to stay away from discussing. And it's been great to see the amount of support other creators are giving to each other, whether even it's just someone's having a bad day and it's like, hey, I just posted, you know, a branded video and it's not performed very well. Like, what do I do? How do I go back to the brand and explain this? I'm really disappointed. And to see the community come back and say, hey, like, don't let this happen to everyone. Like, go back and explain this to the brand. Like, you know, this is some advice. This is a script even to how to email the brand and how to build a better relationship and things. So it's really a place where it's creators helping creators, which for me I hadn't personally found myself as a creator.
I remember correctly, you even went through Techstars.
I did.
That huge success.
Yeah. I just wrapped up Techstars actually last month in Seattle, which was awesome. And actually, it timed it really well because I launched Canopy's pilot. I launched the app the same day I joined Techstars. So it was great to be able to go through that program.
Oh, the app that you launched, the technology of the company, yes, the day you started Techstars.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it was awesome to be able to go through the program and have a product in market as we're getting real-time feedback back from our customers. And again, we've been building every week. We're pushing out new features based on the feedback from the Canopy community. So I think 1 week they asked for clickable links. The next week we had clickable links. Like, it sounds really insignificant, but those listening to your community and listening to that feedback is super important.
You know, so many people are going through their startup journey thinking, should I be a part of an accelerator? Do I need VC money? Do I need an angel? Do I bootstrap? All these questions. How vital was going through an accelerator in propelling your company?
I would definitely recommend going through an accelerator personally. And for context, I don't come from a technical background. I'm not an engineer. This is my first time building a startup. So I don't come from a traditional startup background. So for me, I really wanted to learn like the basics and the fundamentals of not just operating and building a startup, but also everything no one talks about. So how do you raise money? Like, what types of avenues are there to get investment? And what does that look like? What kind of network do you have? And again, a year ago, I didn't know any investors. I didn't know any sort of mentors or engineers or anything like that. So it felt like starting from scratch, having to build that ecosystem myself. And going through an accelerator just sort of like 10x's the network that you have and the learning that you get opportunity to. Learning how to build a financial model, learning how to build a a great deck that tells that story if you want to go out and raise investment. So I would highly recommend doing, if you're a net new first-time founder, I would recommend doing an accelerator.
Walk us through how much in general, you don't even have to be specific to yours, that they take. Like, what are you giving away by joining an accelerator opportunity?
For sure. I think most accelerators are actually pretty comparable. They usually, I think, broadly take around 6% of the company. It could range anywhere between 5% and 10% that they would take as an equity stake, depending on how much funding that they give you. And that seems pretty normal industry-wise. And I think, of course, you know, no one wants to give up their company. But for me, I already feel, even just through going through the program, that I've more than received like that value that they've already given me. And again, being part of a tech startup specifically, you're part of that ecosystem now forever. And it's been amazing the people I've been able to connect with and learn from and get advice from just through simply being part of that ecosystem.
And have you raised money?
I raised an angel round last summer to kind of get up our first MVP, our first product. And then I got into Techstars. And now I'm about to kick off formally our pre-seed fundraise.
And how much are you looking to raise? Like, we have so many people listening around the world. If someone maybe wanted to be an investor in your company, can you give us the most informal, friendly elevator pitch?
Yes. So we are looking to raise $1 million. And that is specifically to be able to build out our team and build out our product. I think we've had a really successful pilot. We onboarded over 1,000 creators in 10 weeks and intentionally closed it at that point because we wanted to run a really tight-knit community closed pilot. And we have over 40% weekly active users, people coming back every week to use the app, which is great, spending on average 12 minutes an app, which is three times the industry norm for mobile apps. So I'm really proud about that. And we built a great supply side of our marketplace. The next phase for us, which is why we're fundraising, is to be able to onboard brands onto the platform and ultimately become that place where brands and creators can connect at stick scale. So for a creator, they come to Canopy not only to learn, but also to earn and to be able to monetize their content. For the brand side, they get access to this really engaged group of creators who are micro creators to be able to source and contract them, but also to engage in the community element and get feedback from creators. Because more and more so now, when I'm speaking to brands, the thing that they're most excited about for Canopy is that they don't just get to source the creator, they actually get to engage with them about new campaign launches or new features and new products before they actually launch and get feedback and insights from the creator themselves before they go ahead with any of these campaigns.
And while you're building this company, when you didn't have an engineering background, how'd you become the founder you are without having the tech side, building a tech company? There's so many, I think this is such an important question because so many people have been on the show over the years. They're like, am I really, before they were guests on the show, when they're in the process, they're like, I don't know if I'm actually in tech because like I'm not an engineer. I'm like, but you founded this huge tech company. And it's interesting to me, you're very much in tech, even if you're not an engineer. How do you build when you don't have that skill set of being an engineer?
For sure. So a couple of things come to mind. I tried to learn as much as I possibly could as a non-technical founder. So I actually went on an amazing boot camp to learn how to build on low-code, no-code tools, which is actually what we built Canopy on. And I learned how to use Figma through this course and build my own wireframes that I'm very proud about. So I tried to teach myself and like do something educationally to help me be better in that space and kind of close that knowledge gap. Of course, that only takes you so far. And I decided to partner with a team that specifically helped non-technical founders build on low code. They're called Ambitious Labs. I would highly recommend working with them. And they actually helped me build my MVP. And at that point, I was then introduced to an amazing CTO. And we've been working together for the last 6+ months. So he's helped me helped complete the MVP and has been with me for the entire pilot, iterating on the product week after week. Finding great people and great technical talent. You know, it's important for a founder to know their gaps and their blind spots and to know how to build a big team to close those gaps. So I've definitely spent a lot of time meeting with lots of engineers and sort of founder dating, so to speak, you know, meeting with potential co-founders or CTOs and things like that. So I think networking is really important to find the right people with those skill sets that you don't necessarily have. And then being open to feedback. You know, you don't know everything as a founder. And I don't think any founder knows everything. And being open to feedback and to be open to learning, I think it's been really important to me.
Did the accelerator facilitate the introduction to your CTO or was that separate?
I was actually on a pre-accelerator earlier, a year, like April of last year with Harlem Capital. And actually, they introduced me to my now CTO, which is incredible.
You've been through all the journeys. It's so cool. Pre-accelerator. I feel for me, like being someone who loves startups and tech, it's just like pre-accelerator and accelerator. I feel like you're going through different versions of camp.
Literally, that's how it feels like for sure.
So cool. I'm going to take a spin on our conversation for a second. There's a question that actually our audience asked me to ask years ago, and I've incorporated in the show, but I'm going to handle asking it a little bit differently today because it's very keen on top of my mind today. And the question is, what obstacle have you successfully overcome in your career, and how did you overcome it? And the reason I'm asking it with a kind of like a different air today is being a creator, sometimes we show up and, or actually we always just show up, like period. Like we keep showing up. You don't know this. And I've been thinking about it, and I'm just going to take a beat to be really like open. I survived an incredibly difficult day yesterday. So showing up today and even this whole time has felt really hard, but I'm showing up. I've been so excited about interviewing you. I'm so excited for you to inspire everybody. And I think it's amazing that you're providing this place for people to just form those genuine connections, because showing up consistently as a creator, though we may look like someone listening to this may be like, wow, Esprit's been doing this for so many years and she's got everything on lock and everything. And for me, today's a remarkably difficult day, and I survived a lot yesterday. And that is the life of a creator. Like, life happens behind the scenes and we keep showing up. So how have you, in the obstacles that you've overcome, continued to show up when you've had those hard days?
Well, firstly, thank you for showing up, because I think it's often taken for granted, but you're right. Creators do always show up for their community, for themselves, for the people who kind of depend on them. So firstly, thank you for sharing that. And thank you for showing up.
Thank you for being here. You know, honestly, the whole time I'm like, man, I hope my energy.
I couldn't tell.
Yesterday. Yeah. And so this is why I wanted to share it out loud, because everyone listening that thinks about being a creator, or a very common thing is, I'm not perfect enough, or I don't have it together enough, or I don't. So that's why I think it's important that I share. Today, I feel like I'm not perfect enough. I don't have it together enough. And the whole time I'm like, I really hope that negative energy from yesterday is not coming across, because, and I'm trying so hard to like compartmentalize it. And I didn't want to flake. I wanted to interview you. I was excited about interviewing you. I didn't want to flake. And genuinely, because I want to be here. And it's like, okay, how do I do this thing as a creator and do it well and also experience life, you know? So yeah, so thank you for saying that you couldn't even see, but I hope everybody listening, you appreciate that, the openness that I'm sharing, because yeah, it's hard to show up sometimes, and that's what we do as creators.
For sure. Back to the question about obstacles that I face, biggest obstacle in my career.
And how have you overcome the obstacles successfully?
This is more of a general obstacle versus like a specific point in my time or in my career. But I think consistently, I've always been told or found myself challenged in a way about my identity. So, you know, you're too young at EY as a consultant. I was told I was too young to get promoted. Not because I wasn't qualified or had the experience, but I was just too young. You know, you're gonna wait your turn. Because, you know, the average age for X role is like 32 and you're 28. So I was too young. And then, you know, I think often I've been told that, you know, I was given feedback that my voice is too high pitched, or that I'm not tall enough. I don't have enough presence because I'm not tall enough compared to the other people who are managers who are all men. Or there's always been things, you know, and I think from a founder lens, you know, if you think about, you know, VC investment, less than 2% of investment goes to women, and I think 0.35% goes to women of color. So it's always felt as if my identity has technically, quote, potentially held me back, or has made me have these uncomfortable conversations around why I'm not right for X, or I'm not ready for X. And it's other people, by the way, telling me that I'm not ready or I'm not right for. It's not me saying that. So I think I've always struggled with that general obstacle around my identity for whatever reason. And I think the only way to overcome it is that I really just stopped caring. I think there was a time when I really took that feedback to heart, being told I wasn't tall enough or wasn't old enough or whatever it was. And I used to take that really personally and kind of retreat into myself and sort of almost lose my voice. And I didn't say anything. I was like, you know, probably best just to be quiet, smile politely and get on, because I don't want to stick out for another reason if I already stick out for the quote wrong reasons. And that mentality definitely shifted when I left consulting. I personally found consulting very toxic, would not recommend that career path. And I changed that mindset at TikTok. And I was obviously lucky that I had an incredibly supportive team. TikTok is a great place to work at. But in general, even now when I'm speaking to investors or mentors or whoever I'm working with, I don't take these things to heart, firstly. And I see it more of a reflection of the other person, that they don't feel secure, that, you know, I don't quite fit the mold. And I kind of see it as my superpower now. If people say to me, well, you're so young or you're non-technical, so how can you build something? Well, I built an app, but it's on the App Store. We have 1,000 people using it with no budget because I had no funding. You know, I feel like I actually see it as my superpower now, that I've reframed how people were framing me as not enough. And I see it actually as something that's what makes me great.
That is so cool. Did you used to, and if so, do you still have imposter syndrome? Because to me, what you shared sounds like you don't have imposter syndrome anymore. And that is so cool. But maybe you have it a different way. I don't want to make an assumption, but it was very inspiring reframing someone else's alleged narrative so that it is empowering for yourself. That's so cool.
I mean, don't get me wrong. I still have imposter syndrome when I go into rooms and meetings with people. I'm like, why am I in this room? I think that never goes away to an extent, but that's okay as well. Because also it's okay to feel like sort of in awe or like impressed, you know, with the rooms you're in and the people you're working with. Like, it's okay to have those pinch me moments still. I think that's actually like, I find that very exciting still personally. But I think I have less imposter syndrome, I would say. Less imposter syndrome. It's not completely negated though, but I definitely have taken comfort in doing things for myself, by myself, because I think betting on yourself is the best thing you can possibly do. Because again, ultimately, no one else is going to bet on you if you don't bet on yourself. And that's probably been my biggest learning as a founder. You know, when people say, hey, like, why are you doing X? Or, you know, is it even possible? It's like, well, no, it is. Like, I'm doing it. So it is possible. And like, let me show you how.
And even if it's that word, like, not possible, like, nobody can know, none of us are psychic, but like, even if it didn't work out, we'll use that word, even if it didn't work, who cares? Like, we're on the journey. Success is really just having as many life experiences as possible and living joyously more often than not living joyously. And so who cares if the startup, quote unquote, doesn't work, because it actually did work, because you're a person that had life adventure and took a risk and learned things and made new relationships. And so, yeah.
100%. I think that's also fear of failure, I think, is such a limiting thought. And it's sort of like, what is failure or success, right? It's whatever you personally define it as versus what it is defined as, like, by society as a whole. And I completely agree with you. This isn't about, you know, my startup Canopy working or not working. Ultimately, it has worked because I've been able to get this life experience and learn so many new things, meet so many new people. In fact, the reason I'm on this podcast is because a creator friend of mine, Lloyd George, shout out Lloyd, who I met during my Canopy journey, tagged me on a LinkedIn post that you posted when you were talking about your podcast. And that's how we got connected. And I didn't know Lloyd a year ago, but he's now one of my really good friends. And now I know you. And like, all these amazing people I'm meeting and opportunities, it's come about because I've been on this founder journey and it's taken me out of my comfort zone. So I completely agree with you. It's not about sort of success and failure in stereotypical terms. It's all a success to be able to have the opportunity. And I'm lucky to have the opportunity to be able to kind of take this risk.
100%. You even think about Goliath companies that, you know, you can't say that they weren't successful, like Blockbuster. Like, can you really say that Blockbuster wasn't successful just because Blockbuster isn't here today? No, Blockbuster was incredibly. Kodak, you know, all the, I mean, what is success? I feel like we think success is so black and white, but it's not. It's there's a lot of ambiguity a lot of gray area in what success is. I rather people view this term success on or like work out as, did I handle my company with integrity? The companies that are my favorite are the companies that have true company culture and values and great teammanship. They handle their customers with empathy and they improve their customer support continuously. And I don't, that's the integrity, I feel, should be the barometer of whether something is quote unquote working out or not.
100%. Actually, do you know what's really timely, us having this conversation? Because I think I've needed to hear this myself today as well, around how success is whatever you define it to be. Because I think it's really easy as a founder to get caught up in like getting headlines and raising X amount of money and all these things that you see, that I think it's easy to think that that's the only way of what success is and to get down about that. But the reality is success, at least to me, right, is the fact that creators are benefiting and learning something from my app. Like that is my sort of ideal of what success is. But I needed to hear this today.
Oh, I'm so glad. A couple last questions. One, most important, is where are you going from here? Like, what is your dream or your vision or what would you like next?
Oh my gosh.
For Canopy, yeah.
That is a big question. I think for me, it's getting Canopy in the hands of more creators. You know, we've intentionally had this 4-month closed pilot with our first 1,000 or so. And now it's about how do we do that? What does that public launch look like? How do we get it in the hands of more creators and start building this community across the US? So I think just for me, seeing Canopy's growth and helping Canopy grow is like the goal for this year.
If I'm remembering the URL right, canopy.io?
Yes, under the canopy.io. Okay.
A few quick fire questions. One, what is a book that you recommend that we all read?
The Startup of You by Reid Hoffman. That was the first book I read back in, I think, January 2021. And that's actually really what set, or 2022 maybe? No, January 2021, I think. And that's really what set off my whole startup journey.
And why do you recommend it? Like, what about it?
I think it really broke down.
By the way, Reid Hoffman of LinkedIn.
Yes, correct. Reid Hoffman of LinkedIn. Yeah. Yes. I think it really broke down how you approach things, how you can approach yourself as a startup. Like, you know, in terms of how you invest in yourself. And I think sometimes when you, and again, I was in a full-time corporate job at that time, and my whole life was really consumed by being good at that corporate job and helping that corporate company do really well, which I love doing. But I think it's easy to get lost in that and forget, like, what do you want for yourself bigger than just your day job? You know, do you have other dreams or hobbies and passions and things you want to try out and learn, you know, for yourself, just to better yourself and have some new interests and meet some new people? And I think I'd lost a lot of that because I was so consumed by my day job at the time. And I think the Startup of You really looks to kind of reposition you and reframe your mind around, like, what do you want out of life? You know, don't let life just pass you by. Don't just stick with the status quo. You can do more than just have your day job and that be it. You know, there's so much more out there for you if you want there to be more.
I'm curious. I wanted to ask this earlier and I actually forgot. Speaking of, you know, architecting your life the way you'd like to live, how do you manage your time? How do you do the things?
My God.
All the things.
The answer is I don't do all the things. that is the reality. I'm constantly reprioritizing my priority list because everything is a priority and then nothing's a priority. So I try and always set for the day two things I would like to and have to get closed and get out the door. And if I can complete those two things, like that for me is a successful day. But I think constantly as a founder, you're constantly multitasking, right? You're constantly juggling. Priorities do shift, you know, as you go. I'm always on the app checking that the app is okay. That's my first and foremost priority. But you're constantly multitasking. And I think you should always be flexible to not turn down opportunities because of time pressures and time constraints. Sometimes calls come in and it's introduction to meet X. And it's like, oh, like people might think, oh, where is that going to lead to? Is that going to really help anything? But you never know. And I think this is a relationship business. And I love meeting new people because it might not make any sense right now, but maybe in 3 years' time, our paths cross again. And it's great that we were connected. So I think being flexible with what the priority is important to mindset to have.
I couldn't agree more. I think it's funny, like, as I go through the different seasons of my life, sometimes my time management feels like totally fluid, and then sometimes it feels like a chaotic mess. It's crazy. Who is someone that you highly suggest that we follow, like a must follow person? It could be someone on Twitter/X. Somebody else called it Twix lately. I want to start Twix. It will just save all of us so much time. It could be on Twitter. It could be on LinkedIn. It could be a YouTuber or anybody.
My gosh, that's a big question. There are a couple of founders I love following for their content. So one is Kristen Nino de Guzman. She's the founder of another creator company called Clara for Creators. And she's had a great, she's also, by the way, ex TikTok employee as well, but she's had a really interesting founder journey. And I think she posts really good content on LinkedIn, actually, is where I follow her, around that, what that founder journey looks like. And it's quite a realistic view of founder journey. Who else? Oh my God, there's so many people. I follow so many people. That's if you want founder content. I also love just entertaining content. One of my favorite creators is Benton McClintock on TikTok. He's an incredible lifestyle comedy creator in New York, and he's having a great rise and a great moment at the moment. He's like my source of joy. Like, generally, like, if I'm looking for joy, I will go to his page on TikTok.
Oh, I got to do that after this interview.
So he's one of my favorite creators for right now.
I'll throw one back at you. Nobody Sausage. Do you know that one?
I don't.
I think that's the thing on. So I know you're off of Instagram. They probably post on TikTok too. I'm pretty sure it's Nobody Sausage. Like, if I could unfollow everyone and only follow, yeah, Nobody Sausage and only follow Nobody Sausage, I would, because it's guaranteed to just make me smile and laugh and be so relatable and lighthearted. And your favorite app or software, it could be anything. I just love software.
Apart from Canopy, my favorite app or software? Honestly, I'm very low tech. My iPhone Notes is literally where all my brain lies.
You're allowed.
iPhone Notes. It's simple, but I love it. Also, I start my day by playing Wordle on the New York Times.
You still do that?
Every morning. It's the first thing I do in the morning, religiously.
Wow. Like, tell people what it is, just in case. I feel like almost everybody knows, but in case.
Wordle is this game that the New York Times has on their app where you have to, I don't even know how to describe it. You have, what, six attempts to guess a five-letter word. Does that describe it accurately?
Do you know the background story of Wordle?
Yes. It was a husband who made it for his wife or girlfriend, and the New York Times acquired it from him.
And I believe they made it in the pandemic, right?
Yes, yeah.
Yes, it was a pandemic startup success story.
Yeah, I've literally played 401 days in a row.
No way. I got to get back to Wordle. I played for a while and then I forgot about it.
Yeah. So that's
okay,
how
I think I'm going to do that today. That's a fun way to start the day. Actually, one more note for everybody who may think that you still need to dance to be on TikTok. Do you need to dance, and do you need to be like goofy 12-year-old kind of vibe to succeed at TikTok?
No, absolutely not. I think at this point, I literally don't even see dance videos at this point on the app. And from a demographic standpoint, actually millennials, I believe, are the highest users of TikTok now. I'm a millennial myself. No, I think to be successful on TikTok, honestly, it's about sharing your everyday life, sharing your point of view and your perspective, you know, whatever that may be. People are interested in learning about people's everyday lives. And, you know, I've learned some of the best, like, cleaning hacks and DIY hacks and things that I just need around the house through TikTok. Or if I'm traveling somewhere, I'll look up that place on TikTok to see any recommendations and reviews of places, you know, and you get a local insight because it's people who are native to that area are talking about it. So no, you definitely don't need to be singing and dancing. I do not sing and dance on TikTok myself. But I think it's a fun place to learn different things, and you will truly find your people on TikTok because there is a community for everything, from like frog talk to clean talk to lemon talk. There is a community for everyone and everything on there.
It's like a great place that I find waterfalls.
Right. There you go.
Do you look at the trends and do all the stuff before you create a piece of content or do you just pull out the camera and start recording? Do you have any prep that kind of everybody listening should like tune into and like, okay, we really should be doing this before we pull out our phone?
I make my content to make my own content, and I can have my own format, which is usually I have a green screen behind me with some like iPhone notes, and I kind of go through what's on that notes page. So I use green screen a lot as an effect. That's really useful for me. And that's kind of my content for where people can save and share that content. I would say though that trends are obviously important, and you have to jump on a trend very quickly because TikTok moves at this sort of speed of culture is what they say. And there's no point, you can't save a trend and use it a week later because at that point it's probably moved on. So if you do see a trend, something happening clearly on the platform, I would say jump on it immediately. And often the trends, by the way, are the things that are less than 30 seconds. So actually very easy to jump onto. And that jump on a trend won't get, I don't believe it will get you follower growth per se, but what it will get you is views and engagement, which actually then stimulates the rest of your account because people might then look at your other videos. So I think it's useful to jump onto trends. And also it's fun to jump onto trends sometime as well, especially when they're low effort.
And still using Rising Music? Is that still a thing these days?
Well, interesting that you say that. TikTok and Universal Music Group have had a bit of, I'm not sure if you're following this, but have had an incident last week where UMG took all their music off the platform, all their artists' music. So actually TikTok is actually quite silent right now because there is none of the major players, none of the major artists are on the platform right now. But yes, TikTok definitely has been a place where you can, you know, jump onto emerging artists and new sounds, and music is important. But it's a little quiet this week on TikTok.
Are the majority of artists with Universal?
Yes. Especially like a lot of a lot of the TikTok native, a lot of the artists who have been successful on TikTok, as in they've created like viral trends before they launch an album and things like that, were actual Universal Music Group artists.
That's wild. That's a lot. I mean, that's a whole other conversation. It's just a lot. It's almost like a monopoly on the music. I don't know. This is a whole conversation that I am not equipped to talk about, but very interesting to me because there are several labels. So I'm someone not in the music industry, very surprised that one label can have so much dominance on one platform. Like,
yeah, no, it's kind
of. I heard that Universal was off, but I'm like, oh, there's so many labels. There's probably. That big a deal.
It's really strange because now all the historic videos are now being muted. So you can go back to your old videos, but there's no sound on them, which kind of makes the video a bit redundant at this point. So people have just been making content around the fact that TikTok is silent.
What do you think? Do you think they will come back or you have no idea?
I think someone's probably going to write probably like an HBS review case about this because I think it's really, really interesting, the dynamic. And I understand Universal's point of view. They want to make sure that artists are being compensated effectively. Understand TikTok's point of view on this as well. They've got lots of artists and labels to manage. So I don't know, but I think things are going to have kind of come to a head because Universal took their music off. So I'm sure that both teams are in discussions now.
You know what? Actually, I have one last question, but you may want us to cut it. So just tell me if you want us to cut it. Since we're like talking about TikTok, what do you feel is like, are we in danger as a society that we're using TikTok? Or do you think that is just some media propaganda and we're fine?
I think all the platforms, you know, there was a Senate hearing a couple of weeks ago, right? When all the platforms, Meta, Snap, TikTok were all there speaking. And I think we're, as a society, facing, I think it's a broader conversation across all platforms. I don't think this is a specific conversation to TikTok, that TikTok is endangering us. I think there's a lot of work to be done from a regulatory standpoint across all the platforms for trust and safety, for privacy, data regulations, to ensure that all our users' data is safe and well protected and that our users are safe on all these platforms. So I don't think this is a TikTok specific issue. I think it's a social media industry-wide issue, which is why, for example, they brought in all the platforms to speak. And I think the only way we're going to move forward is with more consistency and regulation at the industry level that all platforms then have to conform to.
Thank you for sharing that. It's such another conversation to be had, but very interesting to see like what our digital and reality economy will look like 10 years from now, because we are moving so fast. Are there any questions that you would have liked to be asked that weren't covered?
No, I've really enjoyed this. I don't think any questions were asked that weren't, that we didn't cover today. I think the only thing I would add is that I definitely want to, I guess, make sure that people listening understand as well that this has obviously been a really positive conversation, and you know, I'm really excited to be here. But I think from a reality level as well, you know, everyone has difficult days. You know, I think today's conversation has kind of shared like that everything is possible, which I believe it is, but that comes with a lot of struggle and a lot of self-doubt and a lot of hard days where you know, really don't have the will to like get up and like get on that Zoom and keep going. So I also just want to share that point of view as well, because we haven't touched specifically on that. But I think being a solo founder has been and is incredibly challenging, more so than I anticipated. And it's okay to have down days. It's okay to have days when you're like, do you know what? I just need a day. I just need a minute. Because that's, I mean, not to sound cliche, but it is a marathon, I think. And you need to have those days as well. So I just wanted to put that out there, because while I think things are going very well and whatever else, you know, it's still a very long journey ahead. And it's a difficult one at that. And everyone has difficult days.
Would you be comfortable leaning in to that for a second, like what you mean by difficult or what you mean by challenging as a solo founder? Because I very much, being that I've been a founder myself, like very much know what you mean. And I think that the startup world is perceived as a very glamorous place. So I think it would, if you're comfortable, I think it would be insightful to someone that is only seeing the social media posts of the startup world and the coolness factor of the HBO shows and blah, blah, blah. You
know? Right. Yeah, no, being a founder is not glamorous in the slightest. Not for me, at least. Difficult days.
Me neither. Yeah.
There's so many things, you know. I haven't had a salary for over a year. I haven't had any income for over a year. You know, this is a huge risk from like personally, financially to be taking. And that obviously weighs very heavy. You know, everyone has rent to pay. I have rent to pay. You know, this is very normal. And a lot of founders, you know, I don't have institutional funding right now. So I'm doing this because I believe in this idea, but that is obviously brings a lot of pressure to your family life and to your home life, for example. Difficult days, you know, one meeting I feel like can really throw off your day, and then you can spiral. You know, a couple of weeks ago I had a meeting and it just really just threw me for a loop. And I don't know why. You know, I'm always meeting new people and having difficult conversations and being challenged. But I just felt, you know, I came out of the meeting feeling very, very defeated. And then it just threw my rest of my day. And I didn't cancel any other meeting. Like, I went to everything else I had scheduled, but I knew I wasn't myself in those sessions. I wasn't putting my best foot forward, which was frustrating. I think I might maybe ended up canceling maybe one meeting. And then I just kind of felt paralyzed for the rest of the day. You know, I really couldn't focus and I just felt really down. And then for me at that time, I was like, you know, there's no point even me trying to continue to get the work done because I'm not in the right headspace. This probably won't be my best work. It's better that I just go to bed and wake up and tomorrow's a new day. And like, that's okay. Tomorrow will be a new day. It's a new energy. But that's happened to me multiple times where something has just thrown me off my game. And I truly just feel paralyzed. I can't do anything for the rest of the day for whatever reason. And, you know, you have to, being a founder, I think it's very extreme as well. Everything feels extreme. Like, I think the reason founders are successful is because founders always live in the extreme and that's what makes them great. And I thrive off that as well. Like, I love the crazy. I love the chaos. That's probably why I loved working at TikTok, because it was a pretty chaotic time when I was there. But that isn't conducive to living how you want to live everyday life, right? You don't want every day to feel like an extreme. So I think there's just lots of things I'm learning about myself as well as a founder and things I'm having to put in place to make sure that I can do this for a very long time, because I want to do this for like, you know, 10 plus years for Canopy or whatever it is. So you need to make sure what you're doing is sustainable, because if you live in an extreme for however many years, at some point you're going to get burnt out and then you won't be able to keep building and keep growing.
100% of what you said, I personally experienced too. So I really appreciate you sharing it. I think a lot of people equate becoming a founder as, oh, freedom of time. We actually, my friend makes a joke that founders are the only people who work 80 hours a week to avoid working 40 hours a week. I'd say the thing that I feel an abundance of is I get to live creatively all the time. I don't necessarily get to do what I want with my time all the time because I'm working most of the time, but I do get to be creative all the time. And the thing that we need to become masters at is being resilient. And so resiliency and creativity are tops. Freedom is not.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I think resiliency is actually really, really important because you hear a lot of no's constantly as a founder, mm-hmm. I feel. So you have to really have a lot of self-belief and resilience to keep going.
Yeah. And I think it's even harder if you're a kind-hearted person because I find that us kind-hearted community, we struggle more with we care more, which is an amazing thing. And also sometimes it helps to care a little bit less. We struggle sometimes as a community with pricing and sustainability because we just want to give everything away to serve everybody, but then we leave ourselves behind. So I think if you like us are like kind-hearted and really like just nice people, we need to build up some sort of edge of boundaries because sustainability is okay. It is a good thing.
100%. And I think I'm still, by the way, very much learning that. I think I was living at more of an extreme last year, and this year is about sustainability and figuring out how I do this long term.
Yeah. It's very confusing as a founder. We deserve to be paid for our product, our services, et cetera. And then there's this flip side of it, of raising venture money and angel money and how that money, that the relationship with that type of money to a founder's startup company. And that is a very confusing gray area of like, okay, when is it appropriate to charge versus when am I relying on the investment money, et cetera? These are all things that we just need to figure out for ourselves in our own journey. There's no one right or wrong way, but it is okay that we're okay. Like that we make sure that we're okay first. Sometimes we feel like we have to sacrifice everything in order for the company to move forward, but actually in sacrificing ourselves, we're hurting our company. We just don't see it sometimes.
Right. No, I definitely agree. So it's important to have that longer term perspective.
Yeah. I appreciate you so much sharing your story, being open. And this has just been absolutely amazing. Thank you so much.
Of course. Thank you for having me. Honestly, I've been listening to this podcast for such a long time now. So it feels like a full circle moment to be on the podcast as a guest. So thank you for having me.
Oh my gosh. To connect and collaborate with more amazing women in tech around the world. Remember, go to the Women in Tech groups at womenintechvip.com. There's Women in Tech Show on Instagram, Women in Tech Show on Twitter/X, Women in Tech Show all across all the social channels. I will see you, talk to you all the things in the next episode. Bye.
Bye, everyone. Hey everyone, I'm Ayomi Samuerera, the founder and CEO of Canopy, a semi-anonymous social app where creators go to learn, earn, and grow together. I'm based in San Francisco, and you're listening to Women in Tech.
The Women in Tech podcast is hosted and produced by me, Esprit Devora,
with help from Janice Geronimo,
edited by Corey Jennings,
production and voiceover by Adam Carroll,
and music from Jay Huffman Live and Epidemic Sound. The Women in Tech podcast is a WeAreTech.fm production. Thank you for being a listener of the Women in Tech podcast. To support the podcast and cheer us on, become an MVL, Most Valuable Listener, go to womenintech.love, linked in the show notes.